A top union auto official on Sunday told striking GM workers that contract negotiations took, quote, a turn for the worse. 48,000 members of the United Auto Workers have been on strike since the middle of September. UAW Vice President Terry Ditz said, quote, we in this union could not be more disappointed with General Motors. Ditz said the union on Saturday put forward a proposal covering wages, signing bonuses, and other issues. GM responded Sunday morning with a counteroffer, which Ditz said did nothing to advance a whole host of issues.
A big blow to Facebook and fans of free speech. Europe's top court ruled Thursday that countries in the bloc can order the social networking company to scan and remove illegal content and that those rulings can apply globally. Facebook slammed the decision, saying it's not the role of social media platforms to monitor, interpret, and remove speech that may be illegal in any particular country.
After nuclear negotiations between North Korea and the United States crumbled this weekend, North Korea on Sunday said that there was no way the U.S. would meet a two-week deadline to return with an alternative plan. That's after the U.S. State Department agreed to another round of talks in Sweden in 2 weeks for more dialogue with Pyongyang.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's October the 7th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day and another business week getting underway here. Lots to cover this morning. News on the U.S.-China trade situation. We'll also have some update. You heard briefly there in the montage on the GM strike. All of that coming up as we check some business headlines this morning. On the Opening Bell this morning, we will visit with the CEO of Matter in Chicago. That's the health incubator. There are a lot of great health entrepreneurs out there, healthcare-related entrepreneurs. Stephen Collins gets to meet a lot of them every day, and he's in our CEO spotlight today, first up here on the Opening Bell. We'll bring in Stephen momentarily. A little bit later in the program, the Chicago Marathon is this coming weekend. The marathon pumps a lot of money into the Chicago economy, and we'll be talking with Kerry Pinkowski, who's the executive director of the Chicago Marathon. Believe it or not, this is the 30th year for Kerry at the marathon. As the marathon enters its 42nd year, we will bring in Kerry at about 5:38 this morning for that discussion, so stay with us. And, of course, we will keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour right here on 720 WGN. But first, we begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks closed out the week higher, thanks in part to a jobs report that helped calm recession fears. Markets rose after the Labor Department said the economy added fewer than expected jobs in September, while the unemployment rate fell to a 50-year low. There were some comments by the Fed Chair Jerome Powell also on Friday that boosted expectations among some for another possible interest rate cut. But as we look at this week and futures markets this morning, the Dow and S&P 500 will try very hard to snap a three-week slide as those U.S.-China trade talks kick off in the week ahead. This morning, we're looking at futures down nearly 120 points on the Dow, off nearly a half a percent. Futures on the S&P off nearly a half a percent as well. And the same situation for the NASDAQ this morning. NASDAQ futures off about 40 points, also nearly a half a percent. As we check some of the markets around the globe this morning, a couple of holidays that are keeping markets subdued in Asia, in Hong Kong and China, market holiday there. But as we look at the rest of Asia, including Tokyo, off nearly a quarter of a percent, the Nikkei down nearly 34 points. And in Europe, markets are generally lower. London, the only higher of the market indices there, the FTSE up nearly 4 points, just a fraction. In Germany and France, lower by about a quarter of a percent. And oil in the United States is at $53.08 a barrel. Again, a couple of those big stories. High-level trade talks between the U.S. and China are set to begin Thursday amid the ongoing trade war that continues to rattle the world financial markets. The Chinese government has said their delegation will not be offering any commitments or industrial policy reforms or government subsidies. Those are two issues the U.S. has long wanted Beijing to address. Some analysts say that taking the issues off the table is China trying to strengthen its hand in the midst of the White House handling possible impeachment of the president. White House says that is the wrong take to make, a miscalculation, they say, by China. Talks to end the General Motors worker strike taking a turn for the worse. The United Auto Workers Union says that while there was progress on negotiation, talks have broken down. The union claims GM has shown an unwillingness to fairly compensate its workers. Nearly 50,000 workers hit the picket lines on September 16th. They are demanding higher wages, affordable health care, and a fair share of the profits. And United Airlines is putting out a call for pilots. The company is looking to hire 10,000 pilots in the next 10 years to replace the nearly 6,000 pilots who are retiring. Potential candidates could even get their education and training covered for free. Other competitors like Southwest and Delta have also launched a recruiting program for pilots this year. Let's begin front and center this morning with our CEO spotlight. Stephen Collins is here, the CEO of Matter, Chicago's health incubator. Lots of healthcare entrepreneurs out there. Stephen gets to deal with quite a bit of them every day. Stephen, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. It's great to be here.
Very excited to talk about Matter. I know we've reported a lot of the things that have been happening over the months and years. Things are going really well there. There's an expansion that we'll get into, but I want people to know what Matter is as we begin our conversation this morning. We always describe it as a healthcare technology incubator and innovation center. Talk to us about what goes on at Matter.
Yeah, it's a great description. Essentially, we work with entrepreneurs and innovators to help turn ideas into solutions that can improve the healthcare experience. We work with 230 entrepreneurs who are building really innovative healthcare companies, and we work with about 60, 65 large enterprises, big health systems, insurance companies, life sciences companies, and help them innovate better and work across that entire ecosystem to create collaborations that can really develop solutions to solve the most meaningful problems in healthcare and solve those in ways that can really touch the most people.
How hard is it for an entrepreneur to do that on their own without this kind of help?
So that's the thing. It's hard for every entrepreneur in any industry. It is even harder in healthcare because, as most people know through their own personal experience, the healthcare system is a total mess. It is very hard to get a solution that not only solves a real problem and can improve health, but that does it in a way that somebody is also going to be willing to pay for it because of the complexity and the way that the system operates. And so our thesis is really the more we can bring in the people who have that expertise and knowledge from big health systems and life sciences companies and insurance companies that, you know, that know how things work, can partner with the entrepreneurs who bring creativity and risk-taking and energy and can really innovate rapidly. And that combination, we think, is the most powerful way to solve healthcare problems.
To have all of those voices and have all of that input at the very beginning of a project or the beginning of an idea, it seems to me like the way to go in terms of not finding out the mistakes later. You have sort of all of these answers almost at the beginning, don't you, a little bit?
Well, not all the answers, but certainly, yeah. I mean, the more that we can help learn from other people's mistakes, it's part of the benefit of having a large community is that there's a large sort of collective wisdom that can help people go in the right direction. And the more that, you know, for example, someone who's building a technology that is going to ultimately be implemented by a hospital, if they can work with hospitals while they're figuring out how to build their solution rather than going to them later and saying, hey, here's the solution I built. Is it going to work for you? Can ultimately get to a better solution faster that those hospitals can ultimately ingest.
How does Matter find these startup companies, these innovators to bring into the fold?
It's a combination of things. You know, we've been out there now for about 4.5 years. We've been open and we've got a pretty good brand and reputation in the entrepreneurial world among entrepreneurs. So for the most part, they've heard of us and they either come to us or we go out and find companies and entrepreneurs that we think are doing particularly interesting things where we know that we are going to be able to help them and that they're going to be sort of a good fit with our community.
Let's talk a little bit about your background here specifically, because it flows into this conversation we're having. You were a senior advisor at the Pritzker Group Venture Capital, and were on the team that created 1871. So you have a lot of experience where this is concerned.
Yeah, so I joined Pritzker Group in 2011. I'd spent about 10 years at Abbott Labs in a variety of roles. I left there and joined Pritzker Group. And one of the first things that now Governor Pritzker, but then investor and philanthropist and entrepreneur Pritzker asked me to do was really work with him to create a tech center in Chicago. And so we worked on that essentially day and night and created what is now 1871.
And the rest is history, right? I mean, we've heard so many success stories created by 1871 and also Matter. I mean, the list goes on and on.
I think the governor would agree with this, but it's certainly wildly exceeded my expectations. It has expanded multiple times. It's now ranked the number one university incubator in the world. There's 500 companies there, tons of success stories. If you walk in, it is a hive of innovation. It's been really gratifying to see it progress like that. And because of its success, we were able to open Matter. And being focused entirely on healthcare, we have 230 startup companies that we're working with and growing. Many of those companies are already making a tremendous difference in improving health and healthcare. So it's been a really fun, really fun 8 years.
And successful in terms of finding funding as well. The numbers kind of prove that out. These companies have gathered, almost $200 million already this year in terms of funding?
Yeah, that's right. So our companies have raised, well north of $1 billion in total. And just this year, they've raised more than $225 million. This is the Matter member companies. So they're getting funded, and that's a good indicator that there's some conviction behind the solutions that they're building and the viability of their technologies.
But take us into the mindset of an investor that comes in and has a pocket full of cash that is ready to invest. What are they looking for? Is there a magic recipe? Is there something that they know immediately about one of these companies when they see them to know that they're going to fund them?
So every investor is a little bit different, but in general, they're looking at the team, which is critically important for early stage companies. If you're investing in a big public company, you're looking at metrics and data and spreadsheets and things. If you're investing in a few people who are really trying to push the boundaries of something and create something brand new, you don't have all that data to work with. So you really try to get to know the team and who they are, what their backgrounds are. Are they going to be able to push through all of the challenges that are going to be thrown up in front of them in order to be able to succeed? So that's arguably number one. The investors are also going to look at the market. Is this a real market that can be big enough, that can support a solution like what they're talking about? And then what's the technology? What's the product? What ultimately are they doing? And are they solving something that is a real pain point for whoever their customers are? Because one of the things that can be make it almost impossible to succeed is when you're solving something that is kind of nice to have, but isn't a real priority for the customers.
What would be your favorite? What are the top companies that have been funded, the ones that stick out in your mind?
Well, they're all my favorites. They're all doing, really spectacular things. It's a couple. There was some news just the other, it might have even been yesterday, about a company called Endotronix that's based out in the suburbs here. They are developing a really unique implantable cardiac device that kind of combines the best of medical devices with data analytics and, a sort of next generation conceptually of wearable technology to provide really unique insights for people who have heart disease. And they're, going through the long process of taking a brand new concept through the FDA for approval. It's going to be a big deal of a company. There's another one that has really has already saved lives. It's called QuantHC, and it was developed by a cardiologist at University of Chicago who worked for probably a decade, really understanding why patients deteriorate when they're in the hospital already. Developed some algorithms and has spun it out into a company now, And essentially what it does is it monitors patients that are in a hospital to figure out before any human will notice whether they're going to deteriorate or not, and they're going to need some more intense level of intervention in order to save their lives. They went into a hospital in the western suburbs for a pilot, and that hospital put them in the obstetrics ward, and they had a woman hooked up that was waiting to deliver a baby, and the technology kept going off and saying, you know, there's a problem with this woman. And the doctors would go over, and the nurses would go over, and like, you know, we don't know what the problem is, but the technology keeps flagging this woman as there's something critical going on. So they had a meeting of the whole team, and they decided to, you know, run another test with her. And they found out that essentially her blood oxygen levels were critically low. She was very close to losing the baby. It would really endanger her health. So they were able to intervene. They saved the baby. They saved her. And, you know, based on that, as you might imagine, they've implemented the system throughout their whole hospital. But, you know, that is really that shows you the potential of data analytics and novel kind of ways of adapting technology to do things that really enable healthcare to work better than it does today.
Yeah. And I think I've probably alluded in my questioning about this that all of these startups are from Chicago. They're not necessarily from Chicago. They're from all over, aren't they?
About two-thirds of the companies are from Chicago that we work with. About one-third are literally all over the world. We've got, you know, pockets in Canada. We've got pockets in Israel. We've got a bunch in Wisconsin and all over the country. And as we've grown over the last 4.5 years, it's been interesting and rewarding to work with these entrepreneurs, you know, literally all over the world. And we are providing value to them in ways that they're not getting from other places, where they physically are located.
One of the gauges of success and whether or not you're doing something right is whether other people are copying you. And there is some news about Matter opening one of its facilities in New York City. So the idea is so good that New York wants it.
That's right. New York, we put out a competition. The city of New York wanted to have something kind of like Matter, and they ran a competition, and we won. So against all the other entities that were participating, they looked at what we'd built here in Chicago and what we've been able to create here, and they said, we want that in New York. So we're going to be working with them over the next year to develop a physical presence there, develop programs, and develop the architecture to really build a community of healthcare innovators in New York as well.
You must be pretty proud to know that the coasts are stealing something from us, right? Usually it's the other way around.
I love it. It's great. It's been very rewarding to work with New York and see the recognition of what we've been able to do here in Chicago. And the other thing I'll say is for the innovators in Chicago, this is going to be a really important development, because as these companies grow and they develop and they're looking for investors, they're looking for co-development partners, they're looking for customers, we're going to be able to open the East Coast for them in ways that we're, you know, not able to do as well today as we will be once we have a physical location and all those relationships there.
I don't want to get into anything political, and I know you don't want to be political either, but I have to ask the question about having the ear of the governor. That must be a good thing for Matter, right? And good thing for these companies.
I think it's a good thing for entrepreneurs and for innovators to have a governor who is passionate about entrepreneurship and innovation. And, you know, having worked directly with him before he was governor for a number of years, you know, he's been doing this for decades. Mm-hmm. It would be impossible to imagine or have a governor who is more passionate about entrepreneurship and innovation. So it's great for Matter, it's great for 1871, and it's really terrific for the community of entrepreneurs and innovators who are working to develop solutions that can really improve the world.
So what's next for Matter? Do you see this being replicated in other cities just as you've spread to New York City? Is this going to be in all of the major cities? Or is it too soon to say?
Let's take it one step at a time. Right. We're doing great in Chicago. We're really excited about the opportunity to open in New York. And if you look at Chicago and New York, they're arguably the two largest concentrations of healthcare companies and resources and institutions in the country. We think it's a really powerful combination to have locations in Chicago and New York, and we'll see what happens. It's going to take a couple years to get really up and running and going and fully operational, and then we'll see kind of what the future holds there.
Are there any challenges in Chicago that you need addressed that people listening today, whether they be companies that haven't joined in on the Matter bandwagon yet, other things like that that are needed for Matter locally?
There's always an opportunity for more capital to go into these companies. So, you know, they've raised, as we talked about earlier, you know, $225 million so far this year to fuel their growth. There's a whole list of companies that are looking to raise money, and a lot of them are looking for small amounts of money to really get them to that proof of concept, get them to that first stage of development. So we are always looking to meet investors who are interested in investing in really promising, interesting technologies that can improve the healthcare experience.
Stephen, it's wonderful meeting you. All the best to everybody at Matter, and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for having me.
Stephen Collins is the CEO of Matter. You can find them online at matter.health and follow them on Twitter as well at MatterHealth. We're going to continue our conversation with Stephen Collins after the bell this morning. Post our full interview with him in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us. It's Monday on The Opening Bell. One of the events that drives a lot of economic goals, economic development for the city of Chicago, is the Chicago Marathon. And we're counting down the days until the event this weekend. Carrie Pinkowski is with us today, executive director of the Chicago Marathon. Talk a little bit about it. Carrie, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Hey, Steve, how are you? Thanks for having me on this morning.
Doing very well. I hope you are, too. The countdown is underway. I see it here on your homepage. Just about 6 days left until the big event. Things coming together nicely for it, I guess, right?
Well, it is from with the weather forecast we just got a few seconds ago from you guys. It looks really good. But, yes, we'll be celebrating our 42nd running of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. Great Chicago tradition. We have participants coming to Chicago to run the marathon from all 50 states and over 115 countries. So we're looking forward to a big day, and the tradition continues.
You have been there for 30 of those years. Talk to us a little bit about your longevity. Congratulations, by the way. Remember, when you started this thing, you had to really beg the city to let you do it, right?
Well, you got to remember that marathon running was kind of a different sport or a different platform 30 years ago. I think everybody looked at marathon runners as kind of an extreme sport, but it has become such, I always refer to it as a social phenomenon. If you think about the amount of people that prepare for this, it creates an amazing community. We'll have almost 46,000 participants start on Sunday morning, and that really drives a lot of economic pieces of it. It's the hotels that we have, the philanthropic piece, which is the fundraising, and the social piece. I mean, you know, people have discovered running, healthy and active lifestyle. I think it all fits together really well.
It is certainly an event that's, I think, on everybody's calendar, even if you're not a runner. It's fun to watch the runners come through all of the different neighborhoods. Back to the economic part of it, though, Carrie, I want to talk to you. Have you guys ever done have you ever figured out how many dollars each one of these runners brings in, how much the actual money is, the economic development is to this?
We do. We commission the University of Illinois, and they do an economic impact study each year, and we've seen some pretty significant growth. So we do look at that. It is an important factor of what we do.
Give us a sense of, you mentioned the hotels and the obviously the people staying here and spending their money, but what are some of the ancillary economic benefits of having this marathon travel through all of the different neighborhoods?
Well, from the studies that we commissioned, it was derived that the marathon creates over $338 million to the local economy. So that's through the hotel industry. Restaurants, shopping, the travel, all those pieces that factor into event week. So it has begun. We've actually have some of our participants to come a week early. But what really drives that, we look at our 45,000 participants that start the race. We have friends and family members that travel with them, and they also drive that needle too.
Some people watch to see who the finisher is, the top finisher in each of the categories. It's equally fun to watch some of the other personalities cross the finish line at their own pace, maybe an hour or so later, right?
It is. It's unique because it is a participation sport. We have some of the greatest athletes in the world that will be up front. But these individuals that converge on Chicago run against some of the greatest participants on the same course at the same time, which I think is unique to our sport. But each individual has an individual goal. You know, we have athletes who may try to win, which is a real accomplishment in their career. We have Olympic champions. Our defending champion Mo Farah is back. Bridget Koskaj, who won last year, is returning to defend her title. But also the thousands of runners behind there, there's an individual goal, there's an individual path that they're taking. And that, I think, complements and contributes to the race weekend, just the vibe and the excitement.
Kerry, I think it was about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal that said millennials were ending the running boom. And every year that has passed since then, everybody has been predicting the death of running, and it hasn't happened yet. Talk to us a little bit about the trends here. People are still running in a big way, aren't they?
They are, and I think what's happened is as individuals, their schedules have gotten crazier, and their time is so valuable. Running is still an affordable and a quick way to exercise, to get out and to be active. And once people discover running, you know, the ultimate expression is the marathon of running, the 26.2 miles. You know, we also have a partnership, the Abbott World Marathon Majors, that also has become a big driver of our success, especially internationally, where people, their goal now is to run all six majors and get the six-star finisher. So I think there's a lot of things that are contributing to it. You know, Chicago's become an amazing destination. I think the event and the city complement each other. The course that we have, it's a great tour of the city. You get to see some amazing neighborhoods. You really discover the fabric of the community. But it's also really accessible for friends and family members. They can get to several different locations, get on public transportation. The CTA has been an amazing partner, get to different neighborhoods. So it's also a lot going on for our friends and family members of the participants. So it's just a great day what better way to discover Chicago?
Because our audience is a lot of business folks, many business folks listening this morning, I wanted to sort of meld the two, running and business, in a way that I don't think we've done before. Talking about how preparing for a race, getting ready for a marathon, has some implications for your business life. If you're in business, there are some examples that fit in both categories. Talk to us a little bit about the goal-setting part of this, the preparation for the race. That's really akin to what some of us do in business every day.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a great, and I'm going to use Molex, which is a great, one of our official partners. I mean, they have really taken their relationship, their partnership with the Bank of America Chicago Marathon to a great level. They're going to have over 300 of their employees that are going to run, which are participate from around the world that are in their different lines of business that are going to come and celebrate Chicago. It's a great opportunity for their employees to interact. One-on-one event weekend, they'll be at our health and fitness expo. They're going to be able to talk to our participants, friends, and families about what their business does, what Molex is, and what they do. And then also we have over 150 of their employees that are going to volunteer at a water station. So, and they have a big celebration at the finish line. So they really use it as a way to message about what Molex does, team building internally, and then it promotes health and fitness and a healthy lifestyle. So I think they use it on many different levels to really enhance their business, either externally or internally.
And people, a lot of people say, too, one of the big things is having that mental health down, to have a free mind. And I can't think of a better way to do that than to run a marathon. You have plenty of time to reflect on your life while you're running, don't you?
Well, you know, Steve, everybody's life is so crazy now and hectic, and there's so many things swirling around. And I think the one thing that I've discovered over the 30 years is that there's something that's genuine and individual about the marathon. You can control your own destiny. I mean, it's a celebration of individual dedication and commitment and sacrifice, and it's a journey. I mean, there's nothing impromptu about it or spur of the moment. Our participants in some cases have taken 25 weeks to prepare for this. They've been thinking about it since we opened registration last year. So It's a wonderful complement to today's crazy world, but it creates a community. It creates an unbelievable connect point. We have people from all around the world and all around the United States that come together with that same goal of running a marathon. It creates an amazing, just amazing time, fun, and it's great for the city.
I often hear entrepreneurs say, turn your passion into a career. And I can't think of anybody a better example than you, because you've done that. Talk to us a little bit about the reality of being able to take something you love doing and turn it into, in your case, a 30-year career of managing this race.
Well, it's something, you know, it's amazing. In this day and age, I think it's amazing that I'm doing something that I did as a boy. I ran cross country and track as a high school kid and then in college. And then to 30 years later, be able to say that you work on an event that you did as a young guy. It's something that I truly enjoy. There's an intrinsic connection to it, with the elite athletes. I meet so many people. So many people from the business community, from around the world. And then the corporate community in Chicago has been amazing. Bank of America on the lead as our title sponsor. Gatorade has been with us. American Airlines, our official sponsor. It's a corporate community. The city of Chicago, there's really not a city agency that's not involved in some way. So it really is an ultimate example of partnership with our local residents, obviously, local businesses, corporate community, the city, our federal agencies. Everybody comes together to make this happen.
People also say, business leaders say, you got to listen to your customers to make sure you're delivering a product that they want and that everything is absolutely top-notch. You spend a lot of your time meeting with runners, even when race week isn't here. Talk to us a little bit about this listening to your customers part of it and how that's helped you.
Well, I spend a lot of time in the community talking to our running groups, whether it's the our volunteers, the people that participate from a local area or a national area. I'll spend some time at the New York City Marathon at the Expo there. It gives me a chance to get some really valuable feedback on how people enjoyed their experience in Chicago. So, and that information we bring back and fold into our event.
Carrie, as we wrap up here, I think the runners probably are already prepared. They know what to expect. But for the rest of us, what do we need to know as race week moves on and we get closer to Sunday about not only, you know, where's the best place to watch the marathon, what other kinds of things we need to know in terms of logistics?
Well, if you go to our website, chicagomarathon.com, there's some excellent information. There's a participant guide for our participants, and they can look at that information and put the finishing touches on their race day plan. If you're a spectator, there's a spectator guide there. Information on how to get around the city, the best places to see where you want to watch the race. There's information about our Abbott Health and Fitness Expo. All that information, chicagomarathon.com. Great. Looks like we're going to have some great weather, so get out and watch it. And if you're not coming out to watch, we're on NBC5 Chicago television, live wire-to-wire coverage. And then you can also listen to the radio and listen to the event on AM 670, The Score. Wire-to-wire coverage of the elite race.
Yeah, there's no excuses, and there's really no bad place to watch. There's no ugly location to watch this marathon.
No, you can get out and discover, maybe have some breakfast, look at public transportation, get on the L, go to some different locations, and really have a fun day.
All right, Carrie, thank you for being with us this morning. Have a good race.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Carrie Pinkowski, Executive Director of the Chicago Marathon. Again, you can find them online at chicagomarathon.com. The event is Sunday. The countdown right there on the front page of their website. 6 days, 1 hour, 41 minutes, 10 seconds left until the Chicago Marathon.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a little weakness as we head to the opening bell. Dow futures are off nearly 100 points now, nearly a third lower. S&P futures off nearly a third. NASDAQ futures off nearly a third as well. Down day in Europe generally and in Asia. Mixed showing from stocks there. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The 53rd World Dairy Expo is now history, and they made a little history on the last day. Get ready for these unusual cow names. Cutting Edge T. Delilah, owned by Ken Bain and Kenny Joe Mannion of Copake, New York, made history for a second year in a row on Saturday, becoming only the second brown Swiss to ever claim back-to-back World Dairy Expo Supreme Champion titles. Taking the title of reserve champion, second place is the cow from the International Ayrshire Show, Della Plaine Bingo Stinger, owned by Blue Spruce Farm of Bridgeport, Vermont. And the Milk Source Thunder Red ET, owned by Molly Olstead and Tristan Ostrom of Stoughton, Wisconsin, named the Supreme Champion of the Heifer Show after claiming the Junior Champion title during Friday's International Red and White Show. And the second place reserve Supreme Champion of the Heifer Show, Wincroft Dorman Irreplaceable, owned by West Coast Holsteins of Chilliwack, British Columbia, Canada. Again, about 65,000 people from nearly 100 countries attending World Dairy Expo. This week, October 10th, we look forward to two things: the beginning of trade talks face-to-face on the China-U.S. trade situation, and also the NAS report on production numbers. The trade will be watching that carefully on Thursday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories from the business ticker before we leave you this morning. The nation's business economists think President Trump's trade war with China will contribute to a sharp slowdown in economic growth this year and next, raising concerns about a possible recession starting late next year. The latest survey by a panel of 51 forecasters with the National Association of Business Economics shows that they expect growth, as measured by the gross domestic product, to slow to 2.3% this year from 2.9% in 2018. The new forecast marks a downgrade from the 2.6 estimate for the 2019 economic growth that the NABE panel made in June. For 2020, forecasters expect GDP growth to fall to 1.8%. They see little likelihood of a recession over the next 12 months, but expect the risk to increase by late next year. Consumer products giant Unilever, whose brands include Dove soaps and Lipton teas, pledging to halve its use of non-recycled plastics by 2025. CEO Alan Jope says today that the plan to slash the use of so-called virgin plastics will require a fundamental rethink in its packaging policies. The company says that it aims to achieve the global goal of reducing its use of plastics by 100,000 metric tons and use more recycled plastics. Unilever previously pledged to make all of its plastic packaging reusable, recyclable, or compostable by 2025 and to use at least 25% recycled plastic in its packaging by that year. CEO says that the meeting, the new targets will require new and innovative packaging materials and a rapid increase in packaging that can be reused or refilled. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, October the 7th, consumer credit figures for August are due today. Analysts expect to see Americans' credit rising by $19.1 billion. That would follow a robust bump of more than $23.25 billion in July. The August numbers will be out later this afternoon. Also today, earnings from Trilogy Metals, United Electronics Company, and Wipro Limited. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, October the 7th.